Now, broadcasting on Radio Star Worldwide, it's time for Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Let's tap into your own authentic genius and live the life you desire. Join Dr. Rademacher for an enlightened conversation about our brain intelligence, our body intelligence, and our energy intelligence. And now, here's your host, Dr. Bart Rademacher.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Bart Rademacher, Prescription for Transformation, hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations. And today is another exciting day, and I'm really excited to be introducing Dr. Bartley Kerr. Handshake, sir. And it's interesting too today because last week we had some technical issues and things just didn't quite work out. And we have a similar technical issues today. You know, the cool thing about technology is it allows us to do so much, but it's oftentimes when they don't work, then we get stuck and things just don't happen. That's what happened last week. So today we're actually improvising, trying something different. Fortunately, you know, I'm right next to Dr. Kerr, and we're going to have a very exciting talk today. And it's about why hormones are bad for you. And I just want to remind the listeners that this platform really is about conversations. It's about voices. It's about all the different things that can help us with our own personal transformation. Once again, like I like to say, is that, you know, things just don't happen by random. We actually do live in an intelligent universe. And if we are choosing to live our life by our design, then we've got to be, you know, explorers of information. We've got to be hunters for information. Because without that activity of actively going out there, trying to get information, and really, quite frankly, also asking the question that I think is most critical, what is it that you don't know that you don't know? Because when you start asking these questions, and then you're finding the answers, your life can completely change for the better, also for the worse, depending on what kind of choices you do make. But if you're not asking those questions, then you're gonna get stuck. One place where it's really very interesting is the world of hormones. And our bodies have all sorts of hormones. It's part of the functionality, if you will, the physiology of what makes us work. Hormones are critical, and all what hormones are, there are these chemical messengers in our body that are not only secreted by certain organs, they're also secreted by different cells. And they have an effect on the body. Take adrenaline, for example. We're very familiar with the fight and flight kind of response. And it really, it comes because of our adrenal glands secreting this hormone so that it can activate all sorts of body parts. So the challenge with hormones is that it's become very popular over the last 20, 30 years, and also very misused. And misused in the sense, not so much that people are necessarily doing bad things, but just using a product that they don't understand how it works. And as a result, they're getting bad results. In fact, sometimes really, really bad results. So a lot of misinformation is out there, a lot of problems as a result of that. And that's why today, the topic is, why hormones are bad for you is because of that. And we're going to correct this, and I'm very excited and honored to be talking to Dr. Bartley Kerr, who's written an exceptional book about hormones and how they can actually help you. And in fact, he's defied some of the traditional or the typical things that people talk about why hormones are bad for you, and with extensive research has discovered that in many ways they are great for you. So welcome to the show today.
Thanks for being here.
So it's a lengthy introduction, but I have to say this. I've read your book. I really like your book. I've actually written a book myself, mm-hmm. The 52-Week Success Plan.
Also a good book.
Great, thanks. But what I liked about yours is that it was very easy to read. And too often I find you're struggling through books, can't really understand what they're really saying, and at the end of it, you really actually are more confused than you were to begin with. So about the whole concept of hormones, what has been your experience and why did you get into it?
Well, hormones, I mean, if we go back to Greek, it means to give life and or spark. And as we get older, we lose that spark. We lose our hormones. We get old and die. And the second half of your life shouldn't be worse than the first half of your life, especially if you work really hard for things and now you're able to enjoy things. So with the hormones, they've been demonized throughout the years because, like you say, there's misuse of them. We didn't understand them. But the reality of it is they're natural products that are in our bodies anyway. They're there if we want them or not. And more often than not, they're good things that if they're in the right ratios and they work together, do wonderful things for us.
So tell us about this big fear, why hormones can cause all sorts of problems, like testosterone or
I'm glad you started with that one, yeah.
Or estrogen causing cancer. And there's so much confusion, especially within the medical community.
Well, the cancer thing is kind of interesting. With testosterone, testosterone was isolated in the 40s, and two guys won the Nobel Prize for isolating testosterone. Testosterone was supposed to be utilized so guys, as they age, could feel better, look better, have better blood profiles. Later on, there was another gentleman who also won a Nobel Prize who took testosterone and gave it to subjects, three subjects actually. This was his initial study. One was castrated, one and two other guys were not castrated. He gave testosterone to each one of them. One he lost the information of. The castrated guy, we don't see too many of those guys, so that one was pretty null. And the other guy got prostate cancer as measured by an acid phosphatase. An acid phosphatase is a study we don't use anymore for prostate cancer because it's inaccurate. So all the stuff that we know about testosterone came from that, from testosterone and cancer, prostate cancer, came from that one study with one guy maybe getting it. Mm. Fast forward to the American Academy of Urologists last year in their national convention. The big thing they said, they did a meta-analysis. And what this means is they took an analysis of every study ever done on testosterone and prostate cancer. And they told all the urologists in the country who belong to the Federation, testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. Furthermore, supplemental testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. It was assumed that it did because testosterone is an androgen and androgens can cause prostate cancer. It may appear now that the prostate actually produces its own androgen that may cause prostate cancer.
Right. So the bottom line is that testosterone is not causing prostate cancer.
Does not cause prostate cancer. That's from the Urology Association. So, and that's with all the studies that we have out there. So that was pretty much laid to rest last year. So if a doctor tells you to cause prostate cancer, that's pretty much old news because it's not true.
So, but we still have this problem in this country that a lot of people do believe that it causes cancer.
Right.
Right. And so in actual fact, there's a lot of men out there, you know, for any of those guys that want to be more macho. I think you'd like that, Wendy, you know, more macho, machismo.
I prefer intelligence over macho-ness personally.
Oh, well, this helps with that too, by the way.
Okay, then we're all for it, yeah.
We're all good for it. No, and what's interesting is you know, me being in the world of personal transformation, you know, I'm always looking at the most natural ways to become the best version of ourselves. And the truth is that I actually had a conversation many, many years ago and with Deepak Chopra, and one question I asked him is, you know, are bioidentical hormones good for you? And his response was actually quite brilliant and also makes a lot of sense. And the answer really is this, is that if your levels are low, then yes, it's worthwhile. But it's not necessarily a good idea to have supranormal levels. Now, talking about supranormal levels, that's an interesting thing, because what is truly a supranormal level? And so what I like about what Dr. Kerr is doing is he's really taking a very holistic approach. And this is also his background. Takes a very holistic approach, you know, with his clients. And so it's not only a matter of him, you know, managing his clients with hormones. He has what he calls his trifecta. And I'll have you explain that in a moment. But because it's a more holistic approach, the clients, his patients, are getting sustainable results that are very naturally right, you know, for the patients. And so that's one of the important things. So one of the things about levels, I mean, you do go above the normal levels that are recommended, right?
Kind of, sort of.
Okay.
And what it is the recommended levels are based on the 50s. We took a few thousand guys, ages 19 to 90 in the 50s, checked their testosterone levels, and we assumed the younger guys had a better testosterone level, around 1,100, and the older guys around 250. That's our norms. Since then, people smoke less, they eat cleaner, they exercise. I don't know what the perfect testosterone level is. We can only go off of those 1950 studies. It leads into the next book. what does an athletic 20-year-old, the healthiest demographic, an athletic 20-year-old, what is his levels? That's what we're going after with the guys or an athletic 20-year-old female athlete. Those are the healthiest people. What are their levels? We really like to get into NCAA drug-tested sports and say, what are the best people? And what are their levels?
Yeah,
we don't know.
And what's interesting, I mean, basically the way scientific research does work is you know, we study things based on the information that we have. And as we've evolved over the years, 50 years later, we're appreciating, you know, different criteria as to what's normal. And quite frankly, even if you're 50 or 60 years old, you want to be able to function like you were in your 20s and 30s. I mean, that would be considered normal. So rather than looking at that older range that has a lower level, naturally, really you want to have that level of a 20 or 30 year old, as long as it's what I call ecological with the rest of the body, as long as it, as the rest of the body can function optimally. And that's where Dr. Kirk comes in, because he evaluates everything.
Right, and it's not just one hormone, it's not just one. And even in analyzing these numbers, the number isn't always correct, because they have these things on hormone receptor called receptors on a cell that accept a hormone. We don't know how many a person has. They might have an abundance of receptors, they might have virtually none at all, or bad receptors. So even if the number is right, it may not be the right amount of a hormone. And we have to take into account the other hormones as well. We don't want somebody lopsided, high this and low this. If we're going to do one hormone, we got to assess them all. So everything is in harmonious action. And then we have to interplay it with what Dr. Rademacher was alluding to earlier, is the trifecta. A third of it's going to be hormones. A third of it is going to be exercise or some kind of activity that you do. And a third of it's going to be proper nutrition to feed the body. And you have the hormones actually work for you, because you might have the hormones of an athletic 20-year-old, but if you're not doing athletics, they're really not going to do much for you.
Hmm. Right. So do you take hormones, Wendy?
No, I don't. Maybe I should.
Are you like a hormonal person?
I don't think I am. I mean, it's not like my, I'm like this, I'm always happy, so I don't really know. Maybe I should go get my blood tested. I don't know.
Actually, everyone should get their blood tested. Because here's also something that's really, really interesting. And you were mentioning earlier on, I think before we started, about you wanting to build some muscle mass.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is this, is that, you know, our hormones, you know, supply a lot of different benefits, you know, to our body. And especially androgens, and Dr. Kerr would know a lot more about it than I would, is really what we call anabolic, which kind of builds up muscle. And certainly if you're an athlete, and I know that you box, mm-hmm. and you know, every time that you get, you know, beaten in the ring, then you want to start thinking, okay, maybe I need a little more testosterone to build up my muscles so I can give a bit more of a power punch.
And when we're talking about females and muscle, we're talking about basically Dancing with the Stars muscle,
okay,
versus
okay.
Bulgarian shot putter muscle. What we're looking for is high normal female musculature. That's 1/20th of the guys. So that's what we're looking for in a testosterone level with the females. More is not better, more is more. It's like SPF sunscreen. You don't want to throw all the time because it's not doing any more for you. And even with the guys, more is not better. More will shut you down, and then you have to take more to get the same effect. So there's this threshold that's perfect that we have to get both the male and female into to make them an athletic 20-year-old person. Also under blood tests, what I really like to see about this stuff is the hematocrits, hemoglobins, all the really neat things that change the cholesterol levels, the sugars, when the hormones are optimized. It's really neat to see the health status of the patient on paper as well as in their life.
Wow. So as a female, if your testosterone is high, does that mean it's easier to build muscle mass?
Not say that again.
Well, you broke up there a moment. I think maybe that's our internet connection.
Oh,
what did
it
you
is?
Say, Wendy?
Okay, what I'll do, I'm going to type it in.
No, talk it, because I can't see it on the screen.
Oh, you can't? Okay. So as a female, if they have a high testosterone level, does that mean it's easier for them to build more of a body mass, more muscle mass?
Usually, yes. And that's one of the things I have issues with the Olympics right now is they're questioning. I think there's somebody from South Africa, a lady, who has three times the amount of testosterone as a normal woman. And they're saying, should she be able to compete? Well, she didn't do anything wrong. That's just her biology.
Uh-huh.
But she has, I would say, a fair advantage, because it's a natural phenomenon that happened to her. But should they really not let her compete? I think no. I mean, that's
they should
she
let
is.
Her compete. Serious.
Wow. So how do they know it's natural?
They did the drug testing to it. As natural as they can see through their current drug tests.
Right.
But she appealed for the last couple of years and so forth. So we'll see what happens.
So what's her specific condition?
I don't know what the condition was. Looking at that one, I was thinking, boy,
So what's your prediction? Are they going to let her compete?
Yeah, they're going to let her compete.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
They're going to let her compete. They were wishy-washy on it for a couple of years. And just because of testosterone level and there's more muscular in person doesn't mean they're going to win. What it does, it gives them the ability to put on. There's a talent level that also has to go in proportion to sport.
So what are the benefits of testosterone?
For men and women, the benefits of testosterone, one, mood elevation. It doesn't make you artificially happy.
Well, Wendy doesn't need that.
She's already happy.
She's in a great mood.
Another benefit is going to be decreased body fat. With men, it usually looks like it's around the waist. With women, thighs, and butt.
So they lose the butt?
They lose the thickness. What they'll do is they get leaner.
Oh, that's a bummer.
What a bummer.
Fun too. They lose body fat there, increased muscle mass. What's interesting about it is you can eat more food without having the consequences. Sometimes when we get a perimenopausal woman in here, they can smell a cookie and gain 4 pounds. Now they can have a cookie and nothing happens, which is really kind of nice. They don't have to, you know, it's good to be clean in what you eat, but they don't have to watch everything they eat. When you exercise, it actually works, which is really nice. You see things faster in the gym. The cardiovascular output is amazing. We alluded to the hematocrits and hemoglobins. Hematocrit is the oxygenated red blood cells. Many athletes have high levels of hematocrit. And if you jump a point in hematocrit, you know about it. And you can go and go and go.
So what is hematocrit for any of the listeners?
These are your red blood cells that carry oxygen to your muscles. And a lot of our Olympic training center is in the mountains because there's thinner air up there and the body produces more hematocrit. Well, people like us, we're in Florida, we're on sea level, we don't have that advantage of being in the mountains. Testosterone will increase hematocrit, so people can go longer distances or more endurance type things. And it's usually with our patients, our 40, 50, 60s, and 70-year-olds who are in our endurance sports, they have to stop doing their sport from time constraints rather than they get tired. They just keep on going and going and going. It's really neat. And when you look at the blood profiles of the 60-year-old cyclist, just amazing.
Wow.
So are there any other health benefits?
Oh, God. Sleep. One of the big things is sound, restful sleep. A lot of the patients, as they age, they're no longer anabolic. They're catabolic. They break down. There's no reason to sleep soundly and put on muscle and regenerate tissue. So they have a rough night's sleep. The testosterone patient goes to sleep like they did when they were 17. They hit the pillow, and seconds they're out. They wake up when it's light outside. Very foreign to a lot of my patients when they first come into the door. They're like, that's not going to happen. And when it does, it's very bizarre.
And why is it that you sleep?
You're anabolic when you sleep. You're actually repairing the tissue that you damaged during the day.
Okay.
A lot of the patients, as we age, we're not anabolic. We're actually catabolic. We're breaking down. We're becoming old people. And that goes to another great benefit. When we have more muscle mass, the older people, when they get sick, they don't die. One of the biggest problems is cachexia, where they get sick and they lose a bunch of weight and they die. These patients are safeguarding themselves, the older patients, because when they get sick, they just get sick and they wouldn't move on. So it's
for all you old people, I guess testosterone is...
We treat a lot of old people as well, and I talk old people over 80 population, and they're a fun group because they come in thinking they're going to die. And then it's just like that movie Cocoon. They get the life back, and they're just crazy people. They have a blast, and sometimes they do silly things that they shouldn't be doing because they feel good again. So, but they're having a good time with it, and they're going places. They're doing sports. They're doing neat things that you wouldn't think 80 and 90 year olds would do. Most of the patients are between 40 and 60, and they just lost it. Not as good as I used to get, tired all the time. Is there really anything I can do about this? It's just the way I got to live. And it isn't. I mean, you can have the energy set, the outlook in life. And I say the energy set, the energy to do things you normally wouldn't do. I have 3 kids. I got to practice. I have 2 practices at one time. And I wrote a book while I was doing this stuff. I would never write a book if I wasn't on testosterone. I was exhausted all the time. But I had the ability to do some of these neat things that I really wanted to do because I had the energy to do them and the ability to do them, where before I was like, forget about it, you know, because it's just trying to get through the day.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, how do we, you know, get the testosterone? What's the delivery method?
There's so many out there. The most popular delivery method is going to be a topical. And it's basically a cream you put on your skin. It gets absorbed transdermally.
Aren't you concerned that, you know, if I hug someone that rubs off?
Correct. That's a big, we actually had that with one of our new patients when she came in. Her husband was on it. She wasn't. She had high testosterone.
Is that right?
Yeah. It's stay away from the guy.
Well, that's not good.
Wait a minute. What happened to her if she's with somebody who has taking the testosterone and it rubs off on her? What happens?
She gets higher testosterone. And this can happen even in the pharmacies with some of the farm techs when they bottle the stuff. This happened to some of the female farm techs. They were getting masculinizing characteristics.
And mustache and...
Very, very virilizing characteristics. So what we don't want to do, that's not the best method of delivery. For women, it seems to be a really good method because a very small amount of the product gets through the skin, and a lot of it, after about 15 minutes, it's absorbed, so you're not going to give it to somebody else. With the guys, the best method so far is an injection, and good old-fashioned injection. Now, we have pellets out there, which is a craze. It's a fad that came, and it's almost gone. But that's where they inject little pieces like grains of rice into you. They cut you and they put them in. And every 3 months, you got to go back and get more grains of rice in you. It was quite a novelty, but they're not nearly as effective as an injection. And the injection, which most people like, is cheap, meaning that for about 30, 40 bucks a month, you get your injections.
Yeah, that's amazing, because there was a time, especially with, you know, things like growth hormone and stuff, that people were, you know, spending $1,000
a month. Yeah, and what's interesting with a lot of the growth hormone people is they were also on testosterone, but attributing all their gains to the growth hormone.
Oh wow!
Which is very subtle. There's not a bad product, but you know, $1,000 versus 32, you know, the $32 product is the one that's doing the work, and it's just a phenomenal product in an injectable form. We haven't beaten it yet. And then when we do an injection, it's not a daily thing; it's a once a week thing. Mm-hmm. At least that's my protocol. And it's kind of neat, too, that we can mix certain esters of testosterone together to really get the perfect testosterone blend for the patient. Because every patient's a little bit different, and we start with a general and go to a specific. But we can blend different testosterones that are a little longer acting for this person, or a little shorter acting for this person, to go within their height, weight, and what they do in their lives. So they're getting their feel good all the time. I say, you're paying for an A, I want you to feel like an A all the time. And I don't want a placebo effect. If you have to think, I think I feel good, it's not working. It has to be, whoa, I get this. And that's what we're looking for. And it can't just be a feel thing. It has to be on the blood profiles. I'm really picky on that. I want to see these blood profiles get better and better, and almost want to beat yourself on the subsequent test to see if you keep on going. And not that we have to be Olympic athletes on paper. I just really like that for my patients. So when we look at them, almost all of them look like they can go to Rio. You know, just based on their blood profile. So you take off the...
Well, you can go to Rio.
I could, as a spectator.
Oh, okay.
As a spectator. You have to have some kind of ability. You know,
I think Wendy can.
If she's a boxer.
If they have boxing, yeah, definitely.
Put your headgear over there. Those guys are mean.
So do you have a question, Wendy?
I was just really curious about why would people do the... You said the pellets, if the injections are easier and less expensive, why would people still do that?
Let me answer that one for you, because I was going to bring it up. So thank you for bringing that up. You know, what's interesting is that whenever there's a new opportunity in medicine or kind of any kind of market in the world, people kind of want to see how they can make the most money out of it. And I think what's happened is that using pellets seemed very, very convenient, but there wasn't a lot of thinking behind it. Because here's the problem with the pellet, is that the delivery of the product, the hormone, is going to be very constant. Now, as you know, particularly as a woman, you go through cycles. So we have these rhythms. So we all have these rhythms, and they're also based on the release of hormones in a certain way. Mm. And so when you have a constant release of something, what ultimately actually happens is that the body begins to adapt to that. and then is less able to actually manufacture its own testosterone at the highest level.
Oh.
So that can cause problems long term, that you stop taking the pellets and suddenly you're going to crash because you have absolutely no testosterone.
And you stop feeling it for those very causes, because it's like pain medicine. You take it for a while, you have to take more to get the same effect because it's been saturated on a daily basis. Hormones work in waves, like Dr. Rademacher says. It's not flatline like a pellet. It was a nice concept in that the patient didn't have to worry about anything for 3 months. They didn't have to take anything, right? But the problem is exactly what he says. The efficacy of the product stopped working. And also another problem that I find with the pellet people is inconsistent blood tests. Once their blood goes, say they put too many pellets in or too little pellets in, it's hard to correct because you either have to take them out, and that's not an easy job, pulling grains of rice out of a dark area that's been in there for a while.
That sounds kind of gross, actually.
It does sound kind of gross. I didn't like it.
Most of them don't take them out. They wait the 3 or 4 months to let, okay, you got a mustache, I'm sorry. You know, you just got to wait them out. The nice thing about other types of delivery systems is if they call and they say, I don't know if I'm feeling right, we look at the blood and we say, okay, take a little bit more, take a little bit less, and call me back in a week. Instantly, you're fixed. And people change. That's why we redo our blood tests every 3 or 4 months. We want to see what's going on now. And if it's not, like I went back to that A thing, if you're a B plus, we got to make you an A again. And if you don't, we don't want you to wait around forever for that type of thing. We can see it in your blood work and we can tweak things one way or another. People are dynamic. They change over time. And I see it in the blood tests every day. It's pretty well, even in Florida in the summertime, there's a different type of blood test that comes out than when we do it in, when it's not as hot outside. We see different things, we see different trends. So I like to do them every 3 months and tweak what they're doing based on what we see.
So for a person, quick question. For a person who doesn't normally take the hormones but wants to, so you recommend doing blood tests every 3 to 4 months, is that correct?
What I like to do, I do a complete panel of the blood tests that we would do. We run a lot of stuff. The normal blood tests you would see at your primary, plus a lot of the other tests. And then what we do is we trend you. If you're a cholesterol person, I'll retest your cholesterol. If you have high cholesterol, if you have high sugars, I want to see that one again. The other stuff we can put in the back burner for maybe a year or so. And then the hormones you're deficient in, I want to see what those are. And after you're on the hormones and see where we are with certain things. But you don't have to take a big old test every time. You have to take what you're deficient in or what you're revealing to us in your blood work.
Okay. Thank you.
And what I was going to say before you interrupted me, Wendy. But I'm glad you have to speak up, you know, whenever you want to say something. But the truth is this, is that, you know, in this world of medicine, and I've been in this a long time, and it's not so much a criticism of the medical field, but it's just not functioning and it's not serving the population in the best way. And ultimately, we really have to look at the patient. How can we help them and get the best possible results? And quite frankly, it really takes time. The old doctor used to spend a lot of time with the patients, would know everything about them, and have them come back frequently to have more conversations about what's going on. So what's been interesting in the world of hormone therapy is that for the most part, you know, people looked at this as a financial opportunity and want to make it as efficient and easy as possible for them. And so what's happening, this is the biggest criticism of a lot of patients who are not getting the results, is that they go to the doctor, you know, they don't even really talk to the doctor, they get a quick injection or they get quick, you know, insertion of the pellet, and that's it. They're not looking at anything else. They're not doing a comprehensive evaluation of what their lifestyle is like. And they just look at the numbers. And the problem is that when you just look at numbers, you know, that's inadequate. It's insufficient. You've got to look at the parameters that you're looking to change. Mm-hmm. It's your mental clarity. It's your strength. It's your sleep. You know, it's your mood. You know, that's one thing that Dr. Kirk consistently does. He looked at these things and really has his patients, you know, be clear as to what is it, what are their objectives? What is it that they want to achieve? And also have them come back and reevaluate them. And then we look at the numbers, or then he looks at the numbers and looks at the balance. And sometimes, you know, the numbers might be normal, but the balance or the ratios can be shifted a little bit and get more results one way or another. And so that just, you know, shows his personal dedication to making sure. And that's why he just doesn't do the hormonal therapy. He's also the coach, you know, as far as the lifestyle, you know, the nutritional part, and also the fitness part, because all of that blends together. And anybody listening who hears about this, you know, hormones, really can begin to appreciate that if you're going somewhere and you're just getting a quick injection or you're just getting a quick pellet or whatever supplements, and, you know, they're only looking at the results, you really want to reevaluate, you know, going there and finding someone that really can help you, like Dr. Kerr does. How do people find you, by the way?
A lot of times they find me by word of mouth or from the book. The book was big. And so
but also online if they want to find
online, nrcenters.com.
nrccenters.com.
Okay. Nrcenters. And what's interesting about why we get the results that we do is we know that we have a new species of human, if you will. We got 40, 50, and 60-year-old people with the hormone levels of 20-year-olds. So we really didn't have that before. And there's a different way to train or exercise. What's really nice for these people is they don't have to do it as much as younger people to get the results. They have different types of muscle fibers. There's more slow twitch muscle fibers. They train a little bit differently. And we call it muscle maturity. Their muscles look different than the younger people. They look better. The 40, 50, 60-year-old men and women actually have a better look to their musculature than the younger people, simply because their structures are different and they're a new breed of character. They don't want to overtrain, which is really great because these people actually have jobs and things like that. They have kids, jobs, the things that they have to do rather than staying in the gym all the time. But it's very conducive to their success because we don't want them in the gym every day. We want them to, the average patient works out 3.5 hours a week. That's with cardio, everything. I mean, in and out, unless they're a cardio person who really likes to do cycling or these triathletes. We got all kinds of people in this place. But the exciting part is if you want to just be in great shape, just donate 3.5 hours of your life, put on the little tunes that you like to hear and go to the gym. We'll put it together for you to do something specifically for you when you go. Because another problem we have with my patients since they're over 40, they hurt a shoulder, they hurt a knee, they have a neck problem. Everybody has something going on, so we have to work around their injuries in order to get the maximum benefit. So we have a lot of tricks up our sleeve.
You know, and again, I mean, it is not a quick fix for anything. I mean, we have a whole lifetime of things that we do, and we have a whole lifetime left. And so if you really want to invest well, and you invest into the hormones, but you also invest into nutrition, you invest in your lifestyle, you invest in fitness. So we've talked a lot about testosterone. Now, what about the estrogens and the progesterone?
Well, and one of the estrogens have been demonized, and it's a Merlin-type character. In medicine, there's estrogen, bioidentical real estrogen, and then there's the pharmaceutical estrogen that had a big problem with the Women's Health Initiative back a few years ago when they did these studies, and many of the women were getting breast cancer, ovarian cancer. They actually had to stop the study based on the artificial estrogens. Real estrogen is in women and men, and it's not necessarily a bad hormone. It's actually great hormone. It's wonderful for your bones, wonderful for your cardiovascular system in men and women. You just don't want too much or the wrong types. When we get into estrogen, estrogen can convert into different types of estrogen. As women age, they get more of the bad types of estrogen than the good types of estrogen. We got to safeguard that. And there's certain ways we can do to keep it going the right way rather than the wrong way. 70% of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancers are caused by hormone imbalances. My job is to keep them not happening and keep them on the up and up. 30%, you're on your own, kid. Those are things that are genetic, environmental, but the other stuff is going to be hormone-based. We just don't want those bad estrogens coming into play. A good way of around it also is to watch the progesterone, which is maybe one of my favorite hormones out there. They call it the happy hormone.
I need some of that.
I think you have a lot of it based on what you were telling us. This is a neat one because what's really cool about progesterone, not only does it make you have a better mood, sleep like a log when you go to bed at night, it combats the bad effects of estrogen, meaning that the conversions of estrogen to bad estrogen stops that. It's what we call chemoprotective. It fights cancer. It also regulates water retention, so people don't hold it. Some of the women get water retention certain times of the month. This safeguards most women in getting water retention. They might lose a few pounds. It's not fat. It's water, but they don't seem to care. And the mood elevating stuff is great. The big one, what we find with a lot of my 40 to 60-year-old women, is memory. they can think again. What happens when you lose your progesterone, you become a scatterbrain. You search the house for your keys and they're in your hand. Those type of people. What happens once they get the progesterone, and progesterone is really neat. It's like 24 to 72 hours and they feel it. They remember things. Their minds are back to where they used to be. They're not all over the place. They're very focused. They can think again. Very big. It's a very big deal to a lot of people. It's a very neat hormone. There's so many good studies on progesterone. It's a very fascinating one. So if we look at testosterone, we also have to look at estrogen and progesterone, and we have to make sure those ratios are correct, because they call it estrogen dominance. If there's too much estrogen and not enough progesterone, and that's when a lot of the things that women don't like happen. Gain weight, they feel bad, the breast cancers, and all those type of things. So we have to keep those in line so they feel good all the time. But these hormones were demonized with that Women's Health Initiative, but they weren't done with the hormones that are in your body. They were done with artificial hormones, which aren't the real hormones. So case in point, if you take a handful of Premarin, which is supposedly a progestin, not progesterone, and I look at your blood test for progesterone, nothing moves. I don't see a change. You can take the whole bottle and nothing happens. And that's not a real hormone. I want to see movement in the hormone. It looks almost like it, but almost doesn't cut it, because it's much different when it hits the body.
So what about men? Are you treating men with estrogen and progesterone?
Not with progesterone, with estrogen. We like, it's different. With men, with my patients and men, we have a healthy...
You have a lot of cranky men out there, so maybe progesterone would work.
Well, progesterone is great. The trouble with progesterone is in men, but in microdoses.
Right.
And also estrogen. I do like to watch the estrogen. The estrogen in the guys, I like to keep in a certain area. I don't want it high, but I don't want it low. Some clinics take all the estrogen out of a guy. Estrogen causes water retention and body fat in a guy if it's too much. So what we want to do is keep it so it doesn't cause water retention and body fat. But, boy, estrogen's it does a great job in the cardiovascular system, really helps with lipid profiles, really nice on the bones. So I like to keep it right in that pocket of low normal. So these guys getting all the benefits, but none of the bad stuff that estrogen gets them.
But for men, though, I mean, when you're treating them with testosterone, there's the natural byproduct or metabolic product of testosterone is estrogen, right?
Mm-hmm. In an injectable form, what happens is the testosterone turns into, it calls it aromatization, it turns into estrogen.
Right.
So we got to watch that, and we like to keep them in that pocket. That's the important part of it. We don't want too much.
And without a patient receiving testosterone, is that the main pathway naturally to create estrogen in men? Or
it's one of the main pathways, and a lot of our guys, it's really the 40 to 60, the 40 to 50 guy, a lot of times their testosterone shoots down, but their estrogen shoots way up. And we see a lot of these people, and they're kind of, they look like they're chubby, but they have a lot of like puffy skin, pudgy looking faces and so forth. And a lot of it is because they're becoming estrogen now. They got a lot of estrogen.
I'm not puffy, am I?
No, you look fabulous.
Yeah, right.
But the patient who comes in like that, what's nice about it is if we give them a product that decreases their estrogen, in a week they look different. Mm-hmm. And they might lose 10, 12 pounds in a week just shrink wrapping their body because they have all that water retention. And then you increase their testosterone, they're back to where
maybe I need to get my estrogen checked because I don't seem to be losing weight. Maybe I'm retaining water.
Maybe you should work out.
Okay. I guess that would help too.
You could come boxing with me.
Yeah. Well, you live in a different state. You come over to my place. We'll do it.
Okay.
And one of the interesting things, too, is that, you know, I've always, my whole philosophy my entire life of medicine has always been how to harness the potential of the body to restore form and function. Because really, you know, when we look at things as medicines and surgeries and things like that, what I think is very typical and really unappreciated of these approaches is that these are single point entry therapeutic strategies. What does that mean? It's just a single thing taking care of a single thing, and unfortunately sometimes they have consequence with that. And what's great about this approach, it's much more a dynamic approach. It's kind of evaluating how the body is responding, looking at different approaches, different things to finally get the results. And the result is someone that has better mental acuity, he's got better memory, he's got better vision, better muscle mass, better weight, better moods, all these things. And quite frankly, you know, there's sort of like a culture hypnosis in the entire world for the most part that says, you know what, you're going to get old and you're going to feel it. And this happens still all the time. You know, an older gentleman, he's say in his 50s, maybe he's had a very dynamic and productive lifestyle, goes to his doctor and says, look, I've got these aches and I got these pains and I got this shortness of breath and whatever. In fact, that one of my good friends had this problem. He went to his own doctor. He's actually a physician himself, and he's having these cardiac issues. And you know, his doctor responded, "Well, you just get used to it. You know, this is what's going to happen." And so he did not accept that. Totally dove into functional medicine, and quite frankly, 20 years later, he's much better than he was when he was in his 40s. And this is so true. And so we don't have to set the status quo of our body just deteriorating over time because of all the bad choices we made. We can make better choices using things like this. So getting back to the estrogen and progesterone, and you mentioned some concerns. So what in general do we need to watch out for when treating, you know, with estrogen and progesterone?
Well, one of the things we have to get, I hate to go back to the numbers because the numbers are 50% of it, but let's get the numbers first. Let's get these things right. And then it's a how do you feel thing. And my numbers with estrogen are going to be low normal. My numbers with progesterone are going to be normal to normal high. So I like progesterone up there. To put it in perspective, my 20-year-old healthy athletic female is going to have a progesterone level of 10 to 20. The third trimester of pregnancy, that same person would be 327. So when we put a woman at 20 or 10 to 20, it's not, or if she's at 20, it's not necessarily high based on the third trimester of pregnancy when she's really happy nesting and making cookies, you know, and waiting for a baby. So those are the things that we want to look at. You really will not overdose on progesterone. It's such a great hormone. Recent study came out saying all the benefits of micronized oral progesterone, which is the one to do, is so beneficial. All women should be on it, whether they are hormone deficient or not. I don't necessarily agree with that, but the study was so powerful and all the things, the cardiovascular things it did, the chemoprotectiveness it did, it's just a wonderful hormone. And we cannot.
So that one can be taken orally. What about estrogen?
The best way, well, the reason I like progesterone to be taken orally, micronized oral progesterone, is that once it hits the liver, it works with GABA to give the ladies a relaxed feeling, meaning that, and we usually take it at night. You don't get tired, you just feel relaxed. And that's something that a lot of times, if you don't have progesterone, you don't have. The other way is to take it topically. It'll work fine in combating the effects of estrogen, but you don't get the GABA that we would normally get with the oral. I like estrogen. I'm either going to do in a topical or an oral. Those seem to be the best ways to do that one. And again, we'd rather be on the low end than on the high end with estrogen, with guys and women.
So doing the oral and doing the topical almost seems more normal, if you will, because you can modify the amount
exactly.
quickly.
Exactly, and it's out of you in a day. So right. we have nature does this, right. we're doing this.
Right.
We're not as good as nature, but we're trying to get there.
So it doesn't matter what time of day they apply it.
I like the there's a discrepancy on that one too, depending on the patient. I like people to take progesterone at night, mm-hmm. about an hour before bed, because they get relaxed and they sleep like a log. I mean, they're out. Some of my women are very high level executives and so forth. They love to take it in the morning because they're relaxed. They got to give a presentation to remember every fact.
So take yours in the morning.
You know, those type of things. You take it in the morning and they're just on. I mean, they just got it going on. They're relaxed.
Yeah, she hangs out on the radio station with a bunch of guys. And, you know, there's a lot of drama over there.
It's actually the coolest job. I would have to take it at night because I'm a total insomniac. So, yeah, I'd definitely take it at night.
And that's a real big test with progesterone. You know it's working when they call you in 3 days and say, oh, my God, this stuff actually works. Where it's no placebo effect. They're
people
sleeping.
Like me.
They actually... It's one of those fun hormones. Some of these hormones, like testosterone, may take up to 5 weeks to work. Progesterone's easy. It's 24 to 70.
And so you never give it to men, though?
Never give it to men. That was a big thing a few years ago. They were giving it to men. It sounded like it was a kind of a neat novelty thing to do, but the doses would be so small. We do like the progesterone effects on the joints in guys. Mm-hmm. It seems to create synovial fluid in the joints, which makes the arthritic joint better or move a little bit better. I don't know if it's enough that we really wanted these guys to be on super therapeutic doses of progesterone, but it is interesting to see that it does have effects on these people. It's just not really what those numbers are really not in the guys.
Well, talking about joints, if anybody's ever interested in joints, go to my website, drradenacre.com, and look up stem cells. Stem cells is the new frontier of medicine, and I'm actively involved with that. A very highly regulated area. And it's exciting. We're helping many, many people with joints. So, especially guys, since we're not going to give them progesterone.
Right. And that's one of the things, too, is we see with a lot of these patients. My type of patient is the type of patient who is seeking, their muscles feel phenomenal, but their joints are bothering them. And what I've seen with the stem cells is just remarkable. In knees, in shoulders, these guys are going back out there and being able to do some things that they haven't done in a long time.
Yeah, so, it's pretty amazing. And maybe I should talk about that next time, about stem cells, because it really is the future of medicine.
You should.
And how much it can help. So what about thyroid?
Thyroid's an interesting one because there's a way to treat thyroid that's very commonplace, and that's to look at the first thing a primary usually does is look at thyroid stimulating hormone, TSH, and base their ideas on TSH. Some people go a little bit further and look at the T4 thyroid and base their opinions on T4 thyroid. We do T4, T3, and TSH. And the T3 form of the hormone is the active one. That makes you more alert, your metabolism better, have better energy, helps your hair and skin. The T4 converts to T3, so the normal primary care doctor is going to say, well, if your T4 is okay, it'll make T3. If not, we'll give you some T4, and it'll make T3. Many of my patients don't have the enzyme to convert T4 to T3, so they can take all the T4 they want, and they still feel miserable. So we have to look at that T3 component, too, and get it right on both accounts. I like my guys and women high normal on thyroid. And thyroid is another one of those 24 to 72-hour things where they call you up and say, oh, my God, this is amazing. I have energy. I haven't had this in years.
And just so we're clear, what does happen a lot is that physicians monitoring patients oftentimes just get one test or maybe two tests for thyroid. And just for the listeners to understand, the brain has different areas that secrete these hormones. And one of them is called TSH, which is the thyroid-stimulating hormone coming from the hypothalamus area. And that then comes into what's called the pituitary, which then releases, the pituitary goes to the thyroid gland and then releases the T4, which then gets converted to T3. And so when you look at your lab results, if you ever see them, there's TSH, T4, T3, but there's also other numbers looking at the free T3 or T3 index. So that's actually the free hormone out there. And so it's really important for people when they do go to their physicians and they're getting these lab tests, that they really check in with them and says, are you getting the T4? Are you getting the T3? Are you getting the free T3? Are you getting TSH? Are you looking at all these things?
It's a big discrepancy out there, too. Now there's almost a war going on. Like, we have a certain hospital around here that has a bunch of primary cares. They will not do a T3. It's just not in the protocol. Okay. The Endocrine Society.
And it's also determined by insurance
companies. And insurance companies as well. And the Endocrine Society, the Endocrinologist Society, doesn't believe a T3 is warranted on an initial. But the Thyroid Society does. So there's these different schools of thought. I'm more aligned with the thyroid guys because Thyroid Society is saying, hey, look, why don't you check all the hormones? Because what if your T4 is perfect, but your T3 isn't? That means it's a T3 person that we can treat and they can feel much better. About a third of the people I see who are on T4 thyroid are exhausted and putting on weight. You look at their T3, it's an easy fix. It's a totally easy fix. All you have to do is put a combo together for them and you're fine.
And this is important. This is really important because so often there's just this short circuit that's occurring. People are not looking at the results. They're just looking at the numbers, and they're missing some of the numbers. And really, quite frankly, our bodies are complex. It's not possible just to evaluate one thing with one number. And so, thyroid hormones are being supplied or prescribed quite a bit, and a lot of people are just simply not getting the results. Or in fact, sometimes they're too hyper. That's not working either. So finally, and as we're wrapping up slowly, what about growth hormone?
Good, but not great. Growth hormone has a lot of press, and usually the press is really good. What we're looking for here, when we do rejuvenation medicine, which I do, I wrote the book Rejuvenation, on rejuvenation medicine, we're trying to get all these hormone levels into an athletic 20-year-old's level. When we see wonderful results, muscle building results and so forth with growth hormone, I believe it's more than I would give a patient, meaning that they're taking super therapeutic doses of it. And the problem is growth hormone is not benign. In super therapeutic doses, we may have problems with elongation of bones, diabetic issues, organ enlargement and things like that. It is growth hormone. It makes things grow. But it's not entirely bad. Growth hormone is a wonderful product in the growth of tissue, especially connective tissue. It's really wonderful for tendons. So our patients, and we have a lot of them who have tendon issues, growth hormone or growth hormone releasing hormone can help them regenerate tendons. And that's a wonderful aid. For body fat, it helps a little bit. It's not as great as people say. It's just very expensive for what it does. And I don't like I'd rather my patients be a patient for life on the other hormones rather than spending all their hard-earned money on, 5 months of growth hormone, because I don't think it's going
to
do anything.
Now, would it be accurate to say that when just the growth hormone, it would also influence the levels of testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, or not?
Probably. I know where you're going. It's the master right. hormone. No. And it's interesting you say that, because very rarely do I see somebody who's just on growth hormone. I did get a couple of patients from California. Wherever they went, they were just giving them growth hormone. The only numbers that rose were the IGF-1s, which is the growth hormone test, and they were really good. The other numbers were lousy. And I was talking to the guys, and they felt lousy. They didn't feel anything from the growth hormone. One of the guys was on for 2 years. So even though his growth hormone numbers were perfect, the other ones were suffering. And it shows me, because I always wanted to talk to somebody who's just on growth hormone, but like we said in the beginning of the interview, is most of these people who are on growth hormone are on testosterone too, and attributing their success to growth hormone. So it's interesting when the people are just on growth hormone, but they don't really see much, So, I don't want to poo-poo the hormone too much. Is it worth $1,000 a month? No. Is it worth $60 a month? Yes.
Okay. Is it available for $60 a month?
It is not.
Okay.
So I would say, when that product comes down, maybe, for the connective tissue guys, it's $60 a month is a deal. And one of the neat things, it's permanent. So when that connective tissue comes back, it's very good, unless you go and do your sport and injure it again. We have a couple of physicians in here who do it for 3 months every year, or somorolone, which is growth hormone releasing hormone, makes your own body produce growth hormone. Mm. And they do it for about 3 months every year just to get the tissue back, and then they bombard it with their athletics or triathlons or whatever for the rest of the year, and then they come back and do it again to rebuild the tissue.
So it's really safe to say that, in general, focusing on testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, and thyroid hormone, that's his approach. I think it's a very smart approach. It's looking at the different aspects that are working consistently in our bodies. I mean, growth hormone has a very particular place. I'd be the first to admit I'm no expert, but it just seems that, growth hormone is an important part in our growth. A lot of the physiological process that happens in our body, there are growth factors out there. There's many. I use growth factors, in fact, when I rejuvenate the face, and I get that from the platelets. And so it's quite possible, and this is just my personal opinion, and it's nothing to stand by necessarily, is that growth hormone should be really reserved for very, very special situations. And really getting focused on the balance of the other hormones, testosterone, progesterone, estrogen, the thyroid, and adding that with the lifestyle, adding that with nutrition, because, again, nutrition is critical. It's giving you the right elements to actually also, produce the results that the hormones are making as well. And then, of course, it's challenging your body. You've got to challenge your body, working out and things like that. So a few more words that you want to share with us, about 30 seconds, and I think we're about wrapping up, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of this is outlined in my book, Rejuvenation. You get it on Amazon. My personal beliefs on this as well, and I wrote it in a way, there's a lot of great hormone books out there and I mentioned some of them in my book. This is more user-friendly, and I wanted to go into, like Dr. Rademacher said, a trifecta of rejuvenation. I wanted to outline as much information in an informative way of how to exercise. It's all in there, how to eat, and my opinions on hormones in the book. So you're jam-packed with information. If you're not around here, go to your doctor, bring the book to them and say, hey, listen, what do you think about this? If you're interested in hormones, if not, make a trip out to Florida. It's a wonderful place. We got Disney down the road. It'd be wonderful to see you.
Great. Awesome. And you can check them on online, NRCcenters.com. Well, I'm Dr. Bart Rademacher, prescription for your transformation, hashtag real people, hashtag real conversations. It's that platform where I bring many different voices, many different talents, so that you can just, you know, tune in, find out the things that you don't know that you don't know that can actually change your life. Thank you so much. And next time, I think we might be talking about stem cells.
Thanks for listening to Dr. Rademacher's Prescription for Transformation. Join Dr. Bart Rademacher live right here on Radio Star Worldwide each week or on demand 24/7.